our time. We're uncaged.
Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple, and over the next 20 minutes, I'll be bringing you the quickest firing news roundup of the week. I'll be getting down and dirty with a very special guest going through some big stories. I'll be taking a part of this week's question time, and also I'll be bringing you some of the biggest, most banging political tunes going. So, lock and load, people. Let's go.
I can no longer represent a government and a party who can't open their eyes to the suffering endured by the most vulnerable in society. Suffering which we have deepened whilst having the power to fix. Now if there's a smile on my
face, it's only there trying to fool us. What's up, everyone? I am Steve Topple. It is Sunday the 24th of February, and that can only mean one thing. It's this week's edition of Topple Uncaged. Yes, the most odious of all the odious shits, Heidi Allen, feigning concern for the most vulnerable in society after voting 16 times for welfare reforms that have led us to this point. I asked Twitter what the collective noun for a collection of odious shits, also known as the Independent Group, should be. I think the best response was a tinge of odious shits. And while Allen's crocodile tears are fooling no one, the tinge of odious shit's collective tears of a clown have been sold to us by the most corrupt media in the Western world as being about Brexit and anti-Semitism. The tears of a clown. It's less about those things and more about these 11 gravy-training insidious bastards knowing that their brand of careerist politics is dead in the water. It's about their last pathetic gasp for trying to maintain their relevance and their pay packets. You can smile, group hug, and pretend to be excited while throwing racist insults all you want. The game's up. It's all over. The tinge of odious shits should quietly retreat back to the septic tank they came from. But if you don't want to hear a load of stinking old bullshit, then you've come to the right place. I've got the quickest news roundup in the UK as always. I will have a fantastic guest discussing the week's top stories. I'll be taking down this week's insidious, odious question time. And I've got a sensational international music guest on Revolutionary Birdsong. So, grab your nearest roll of Andrex and get wiping, because I think the splattering of odious shits is going to continue for a while. The fastest news segment in the UK, it's Plucked News. Yes, it is the UK's quickest news roundup. It is Plucked News, where I give you five news stories in about 5 minutes, bringing you all the information you need. So, plug back your ear holes, concentrate, because here comes the Topple science bit. In 3, 2, 1... And first off, I'm up to my mate John Pring at Disability News Service, and he tweeted that today, this by BBC, this by John Pring Disability News Service, and this by Marsha de Cordova. How on earth can DWP press office continue to hold the line that the DWP is not a catastrophically failing department? Essentially, what John Pring had done is roll three stories into one tweet. The largest one, of course, being the news that 30,000 ESA claimants had been underpaid by the DWP and had been waiting years for their money. The biggest story with this is, of course, that 20,000 of them could well have died before the DWP had even paid them what they were owed. Now, the DWP can hold the line that it's catastrophically failing because I think it's designed to be like this. As I've repeatedly said, what has been happening since around 2007 is that the DWP is slowly being moulded, so it is failing, so people do not want to claim benefits, are put off from the whole process and the system, and therefore are forced into precarious, low-paid employment. It is this dystopian agenda where we are creating an underclass of people who are going to be forgotten about under universal credit, left on benefits with charities to mop up shortfall, and everyone else is pushed into any kind of work they can do, whether or not they can cope with it or not. So, sorry John, but the catastrophically failing DWP is like that by design. And for story number two, I'm off to Wired, and they reported that 5 of the top far-right figures are British. We're world leaders in hate. This is a report by the campaign group, Let's Make Some Banners and Shout Fascists at People We Don't Agree With, because that's really going to change their mind. Hope Not Hate, who concluded that 5 of the world's top far-right figures reside and tweet out of the UK. Now, as the article said, there is a caveat with this, which is, of course, that the UK social media traffic is a lot larger than other countries. Therefore, voices like Katie Hopkins and Tommy Robinson are naturally going to be amplified anyway. But as always, what is missing from this analysis, and what so many liberals and people on the left fail to recognise because the truth bloody hurts, is the reason why these polarising figures are gaining attention and why people are drawn to them. Again, we're back to the same reasoning as to why centrism has failed and why the TIG group will get nowhere fast. Decades of neoliberal policy, accompanied with extreme political correctness, has effectively abandoned so many working class communities that they are naturally now driven to the right. Rampant inequality, degradation of services, and a feeling that they don't really matter anymore has led us to this situation. Liberals and the left need a bit of self-reflection, because of course this is why figures like Tommy Robertson and KG Hopkins are apparently gaining traction. It's the failures, especially of the left over the past 30 years, to make a truly equal society where everyone is equal, regardless of sexuality, regardless of skin colour, regardless of religion. Self-reflection, please, and quit. And for story number three, I'm off to Gloucestershire Live. Yes, Gloucestershire Live. And they reported that Gloucestershire politician Molly Smith-Cato arrested after breaking into Belgian airbase. Go on, the Green Party. This is the story of Mrs. Scott Cato, who was one of three Green MEPs and a number of Belgian peace activists who scaled a perimeter fence and blocked a runway where dockpiling of American B-61 nuclear bombs is happening in Belgium. Massive hat tips to the Green Party, never afraid to get their hands dirty, always on the front line of things like this. And a good lesson to us all. I think 2019 needs to be the year where everyone, me included, must take more direct action to start trying to make a change in society. And as always, the Green Party are leading the political way on this. All power to those Green MEPs. And for story number four, I'm off to The Guardian, and they reported that world's food supply under severe threat from loss of biodiversity. This is about a report by the UN which found that over the past two decades, around 20% of the Earth's vegetated surface has become less productive. The report said there was a debilitating loss of soil biodiversity, forest grasslands, coral reefs, mangroves, seabed, and genetic diversity in crop and livestock species. Now, what does all this jargon mean? Essentially, our massive agricultural industries are destroying this planet. But the knock-on effect, of course, is on us and our food supply chains. Essentially, coupled with the news a couple of weeks ago that insects could become extinct in 100 years, and we are facing a massive ecological catastrophe. In some respects, I think more damaging than climate change could be. But what, of course, no one wants to talk about is the solutions. This report interestingly pointed out that two-thirds of crop production comes from just 9 species. In amongst those are soybeans. Now, just last month, we had a report out about a planetary diet that we should all be following, where we go essentially vegan and start eating more soybeans. No! That's part of the fucking problem! Soybean production is already causing massive swathes of forest to be lost. And now, on the one hand, you have this report which was published in The Lancet saying we all need to live off this planetary diet and start going vegan. And on the other hand, you have this report from the UN saying that, well, actually, soybean production is extremely bad for the planet. So which is it? Well, of course, the answer is very simple to me. We as a species need to shift to a communitarian model of society. Grow local, eat local, produce things in our local communities, self-governance, abandon corporations, and essentially live locally and sustainably. In other words, no globalisation. Problem is, everyone's a bit too scared to say that. And finally, for story number five, I'm back home to the Canary, and my mate Stefan Schmidt reported a minister who quit over a delay of a problem gambling plan gets a job with a firm that promotes gambling. Now, don't all laugh at once, because I know you're not going to be surprised by this, but this is the news that former sports minister Tracy Crouch has taken a £51,000 a year job, yes, that much money, in sports communications, in other words, sports PR. One of the firms involved with this company who they represent is 888 Bingo. Yes, promoting gambling. Now, there's no massive shock horror here with the fact that Conservative MP is a fucking hypocrite, nor is there no shock horror about the blatant lobbying that must have gone on. But for me, what this story sums up is the rampant nature of corporatist capitalism. That is where effectively the lines between big business and big government become completely blurred. You can't see which one is which. Ministers and that revolving door trotting in and out of parliament into jobs related to the jobs in parliament they used to do, while getting paid handsomely for it. It was rampant in New Labour, and it is still rampant in the Conservative Party. And the question we need to be asking ourselves is, why do we let this continue? Corporations are completely skewing government policy, left, right and centre. You only have to see it in the fracking industry. And Tracy Crouch's move is a perfect example of this and why it needs to end. And haven't even time to mention the Brit Awards. Yes, that massive circle jerk from the crony capitalist music industry. That was fun to watch. Not least finding out that Sam Smith can't actually sing. Nor have I time to mention the epitome of our corrupt media in the UK, one of the most nefarious in the Western world. That is, Anna Soubry and Jess Phillips hosting shows on the LBC. If you want any more examples of how gender-driven our rancid corporatist press is, then just check out their two shows. What a bunch of odious shits. Nor have I time to mention Bernie Sanders saying he will stand for president in 2020. Feel the burn. Now, don't get me wrong, my opinion hasn't changed. I don't think people like Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn are a long-term solution to society's problems. However, it would be delicious egg on Hillary Clinton's face, wouldn't it? And I really must give a shout out to the Birmingham home care workers who have joined the Birmingham striking bin workers in solidarity against the Labour Council. Don't forget, this is the kind of action we need to be seeing up and down the country. Trade unions and activists coming together over massive causes. Brilliant stuff, guys. And I really must fit in time to laugh at, yes, Ian Austin quitting the Labour Party. He wouldn't even join the Tick group because they're a bit too left-wing for him. I've one word to you, Ian. Please leave the door open on your way out to let Jess Phillips pass through and then slam it fucking behind you. And that's it for this week's Plucked News. However, more about the Tick group next. Dissecting this week's top stories, it's me, free-flying with... I wanted to try and avoid it, but it is unescapable, of course. The biggest story of this week is the forming of the Independent Group. Well-known political figures from the Labour Party defecting and forming their own group, and then a bunch of scallywag Tories joining them. I'm joined this week to discuss this story with the fabulous and very good friend of mine, editor of Unity News. It's the fantastic Lizzie Fletcher. Lizzie has joined me on the podcast. Hello.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. It's lovely to finally get you on here. We're going to talk about the Independent Group. Up to this point, for listeners at home so they know, we're recording on Friday the 22nd of February, and as of this minute, there have been no more defections. So we're still sat at the eight little dwarfs and the three, as I call them, odious shits.
There's three greedy little pigs.
Yes, that's even better. I like that. Yes, greedy little pigs. We'll come on to that later, actually. We've also had Ian Austin leave the Labour Party, but that shithead, that's another story, because he's not joining the Independent Group. So, Lizzie, I mean, this has happened. The press is painting it in various ways, and there's obvious agendas and narratives being pushed with this story. But what's the reaction been like on the ground to this split from the Labour Party?
Oh, on the ground, people are saying that Tinge, as we've all started to call it, the independent new group of elitists,
yes,
is what it stands for. And there are two different schools of thought. There are those people who are involved in politics or interested in politics, but yet they're on the ground in the communities. And there are those who only watch the TV, read the Sun newspaper, that aren't interested in politics whatsoever. And they're all saying, how come everybody hates Corbyn? I must hate Corbyn too. And these people that have left the Labour Party, not counting the people who've left the Tory Party, because they're being slightly ignored, aren't they?
Very true.
Well, in the communities they are, and in mainstream media they are. You know, they're not being pilloried, or even the Labour MPs that have left to join Tinge haven't been pilloried, but they are in the news. So people are saying that, well, there must be some truth to it if half of his front bench or back bench are stepping down and joining this new party. The people in Labour are very, very glad to see the back of them.
I imagine they are, yes. Well, I want to touch on that a bit later on. But, I mean, it's interesting you say that some of the... It is propaganda, ultimately. We have to call it what it is, and it is this whole situation is laced with propaganda. It's interesting that you sort of see it filtering down, if you like. I mean, is that something, just briefly, that you think... is combatable? Do you think we can filter through that?
No, I don't think it is, unless we get people online, as opposed to just sucking in the mainstream media news, or otherwise going out in our communities, each of us, and talking to everybody, you know, in the cafes, in shops, as we're walking along, and educate them to put it mildly. You know, say to them, when they say to you, crikey, everybody hates Jeremy Corbyn, it's so obvious, why have you got such a horrible leader in the Labour Party that nobody likes? You can say, well, why don't you look at his record? You know, and you can see that it's all mainstream media propaganda. And it's even the launch of this new Tinge group is perfectly placed to stop Jeremy Corbyn in any general election that's upcoming. And it leads me to believe, and it leads a lot of people who are in the know on the ground to believe, that a general election is more and more likely because everybody's getting in the propaganda against Jeremy Corbyn now and starting to train people's minds to think that he will never stand a chance.
Fascinating point about an imminent general election, because I was, as soon as Corbyn was elected, the first thing that I wrote on this was that the Labour Party will split. now. It is going to happen. And I know lots of people have been saying that. And it was just a case of when, not if, as it were. And it does seem intentionally timed to cause the maximum possible damage to Corbyn and the Corbyn project. And yeah, just moving on from that, you've got a few suspicions. There's a few sort of things which have flagged up for you, which we discussed off air, as it were, that you think are a bit dodgy.
They're funded by a single company called Gemini A Limited. Gavin Shuker's the only director. He was appointed in January. They're not letting anybody see their funding. So who is funding them and why? It's pretty obvious to me that they're funding them so that they can keep them in place to cause as much damage to any general election for Jeremy Corbyn or that lefty Labour, shall we call it. And the other thing is, their Twitter account shut down for 3 hours the other night. The first day they were created, their Twitter account was shut down for 3 hours, and when it appeared again at 4 a.m, it had 70,000 followers. And
once you
do a little bit of research, you find that a significant number of these followers present as bots. You know, they have very few followers. They only have one or two followers. They only just got created this month. You know, things like that. So a significant number of their followers are what present as bots. And, I think this all speaks to a plan, doesn't it? You know, you'd have to be a bit stupid not to see this.
Yeah, exactly. And the Twitter thing is very interesting. I mean, whether it's a case of that automated bots have followed them because it's becoming a high-profile account, whether it's a case of they've paid for a load of bots to push whatever agenda they have up the Twitter spectrum, or whether it's the pesky Russians have done something, who knows? But it's definitely interesting. I mean, this has been painted, of course, as a disaster for Corbyn. I mean, in fairness to the mainstream media, some of the more significant commentators have come out and said that this is the sort of start of the hemorrhaging of both major parties, but predominantly the narrative is this is a disaster for Corbyn. Now, obviously, I don't think a lot of Labour members feel like that. As a sort of outsider in this, what are your thoughts? I know what you're going to say.
Well, my thoughts are that everybody that I know, and that is a significant number of people. I do network a great deal, so I get views from across the board. And everybody I know that is online in any way, shape or form is going to be voting for Labour, is going to be voting for Corbyn, basically. They're not going to be voting, for anything but the manifesto that was presented. So I know that if you look at it without any political bias, it's fantastic to have three parties again. You know, I mean, the Liberal Democrats have died a death, haven't they? And the Greens never got anywhere anyway. Yeah. So to have another party that can be a different voice for those centrist people, because let's say they're not all nasty, evil, bring on the austerity people, are they?
No.
Some of them are very nice people.
I'm sure.
Well, some of the voters for them will be. So yeah. I think that'll be good. You know, I think it is definitely to split the vote. And what about the majority? Do the Tories still have a majority? It was 326 was needed. They have 314 plus 10 DUP. So that would make them, they'd already lost their majority. They didn't have a majority in the first place, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But Sinn Féin changes that, because Sinn Féin don't sit, that changes to 323. Mm. So they're one over. And so if many more Tories go, then that may change the balance of power. But that hasn't made a difference in the past, 4 years, has it? Since 2015, when Was it 2015 when the rules changed? I don't know. I'm really not up on a great deal of party legislation or government legislation, shall I say.
No, the Fixed Term Parliament Act was 2012, I believe.
There you go, then. So, you know, I mean, really, they're playing it cool. They're making sure that only the right amount of Tories leave the Tory party. They're making sure that not too many leave the Tory party so that they lose their slight majority. It's all a plan.
Yeah, I think it is. And I mean, I agree with your assessment, as it were. Do you think they're going to achieve any electoral success if and when we have a general election?
Yes, they'll have all the... We'll find out something, won't we? Because... especially if Blair does join them. I hope he does, because we really need him out of the Labour Party, because he's not and never has been a Labour person. So I think if he joined the centrist party tinge, then I think that all the people who worship Blair or think that love war, love false reasons to go to war, we'll be following him, and we'll see at any general election, hopefully this summer, we'll see how many people actually do defend Blair, won't we?
I mean, for me, I can sum this up very easily. These people are a bunch of odious shits. Essentially, they knew that their days as Labour politicians were numbered. They knew that they would be ousted either by their CLPs, or if they stood on their Labour platform, they would be highly unlikely to get elected. Therefore, they have, in the last gasp attempt to firstly keep themselves relevant and secondly keep riding the Westminster gravy train, they have turned to forming a new party to keep themselves in that loop, as it were. I think electorally it will be a challenge for them. I think they'll get some defectors from both parties who are unhappy with the polarisation of politics at the minute, to the left and to the right, who will vote for them. But ultimately, all parties are still chasing that sort of 33-odd% of people in this country who do not vote. And the demographic of a lot of those people, as studies have shown, is that they're the lower socioeconomic classes in the country. And these people have not been inspired, firstly, to vote for either the Tories or Labour. So why they'd be inspired after decades of neoliberalism chaos, which has brought us to this point that centrism is effectively dead across the world anyway, why would they then vote for centrists? I think it's a real political conundrum, and I think it will be very, very interesting to watch play out.
Yeah, I really don't think that anybody will vote for... that doesn't vote at the moment will be tempted to vote for the centrist party tinge. No,
exactly.
They may well be tempted by Corbyn mania.
I agree, and I think it's a brilliant way to round up. So, Lizzie, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Tinge, Tig, odious shits, whatever we're going to call them. And it's going to be a fascinating year politically. And if you don't know, check out Unity News, fantastic organisation that Lizzie edits. Lizzie, thank you for coming on Topple Uncaged.
Thank you, Steve.
Taking down this week's BBC QT, it's question time. Topple chirps back. UKIP planting question time, audience klaxon. Well, not really a plant, of course, as several people exposed on Twitter. Former UKIP parliamentary candidate Stephen Ingram was in the audience asking a question. Now, for me, this is not a case of it being a plant. This is the inherent problem with question time all over. By default, the programme's whole premise is flawed. Essentially, what you have is people who are politically affiliated, who have formed political ideas and ideologies, asking questions of a panel who also have formed ideas and ideologies. You can see it all the time with the fact that Tory and Labour councillors are often present in the audience. This defeats the whole object. What we should be having is around the 33% of people who do not vote in this country, but who are quite often the worst affected by government policies, asking the questions. Why are we having people with predetermined views who will not shift from their ideological positions always in the question time audience? The programme is really a sham, and we should all stop watching it. However, until we do, I will keep ripping it apart on Topple Uncaged. So, question time, what have you got for me this week? First question, please.
Have the major political parties in this country move too far from the hallowed centre ground.
No, political parties have not moved from the centre ground, nor have they shifted the centre ground. The centre ground has shifted because of decades of failed neoliberal policies. If you look at the past 30 years, we've had mass privatisation, mass political correctness, underinvestment in public services, and the rampant growth of the financial services sector seen by a blossoming of rich people's wealth and the inequality gap widening. So therefore, what has happened is, people on the ground, their political positions have shifted. They've seen that this centrism, note to the TIG group, has failed miserably over the past few decades and that they are no better off for it. Therefore, they are both drawn to policies more on the left and more of the right than the political centre. Consequently, the centre ground has shifted. And I would say it now firmly exists within the realms of Corbyn's democratic socialism. Next question, please.
Is the Home Secretary playing political games with the life of Shamima Begum?
Javid is playing massive political games with this case, but not, I think, for the reasons that most of the press are citing. Firstly, let's bear in mind this girl was groomed at the age of 15 in this country. Therefore, she should return to this country to face whatever justice the system wishes to mete out. Secondly, remember, at the back of Javid's mind must be the fact that Trump came out several days ago saying that if the UK and European countries do not accept ISIS prisoners as it is holding that are born in those countries, then they're just going to set them free. Therefore, by rejecting this specific case, he is effectively setting the precedent for future government policy. Moreover, he is also setting the precedent for the fact that there are hundreds still of British fighters in and around Syria who are going to be coming back to this country also. So he has set the benchmark for what will happen to these people. Thirdly, he was playing political games with Bangladesh from the outset, knowing full well that they would say, hands up, it's not our problem, Gov. But moreover, he is also covering for the security services who was monitoring this and knew of this situation with this young girl and what was happening to other people like her in this country for years and chose to ignore it. Whether you think that was in their best interest and they were doing it on purpose or not is of course up to you. So yes, major political games being played to effectively cover up and keep their hands free of any problems. It's a disgrace. Now, as usual, if I was in the Question Time audience, there's a couple of questions that I would like answering, please. Firstly, while we all focus on the US-backed coup in Venezuela, is there a reason none of you are mentioning the US-backed coup that seems to be underway in Haiti? And secondly, I would like to ask Chris Leslie, if your newfound brand of centrism that is completely different to the old centrism, except it's not, is going to prove so popular, why is Macron's new brand of centrism in France facing such a backlash more seen than ever before in recent years? You're a gravy-training, odious shit. And that's it, Question Time. I look forward to more UKIP plants next week. And here's this week's banger in Revolutionary Birdsong. My guest on this week's podcast has recently released a 9-track EP, but what he's also done, inadvertently, is exposed himself as one of the most masterful storytellers coming out of the Roots Revival movement at the minute. I mean, this EP is absolutely staggering. It is a mesmerizing journey. So I'm extremely excited to be on my physical hilltop near Crystal Palace, which is the highest point in London, UK, to this man's spiritual hilltop. It is an absolute pleasure to have him on Topple Uncaged. I would like to welcome Junior Morgan. Junior, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, brother. Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure, you know. And yeah, I'm looking forward to have a nice interview, you know.
I think we can do that. I think it should be great. It is excellent to have you on here. Hilltop, your 9-track EP. It's a masterful piece of storytelling. I have to say, in terms of what you are saying and the way you've constructed it as well, it stands out at the minute among the Roots Revival movement. For me also, what immediately grabbed my attention is the return of a proper Roots sound. It was, it's pure Roots, and it's a genius pure Roots as well, because again, the way it's constructed, the music is a stepping stone to what you're actually saying, which is what Roots should be. Was it a conscious decision to go back to a kind of stripped back Roots sound to really get across your storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, all right. My wife would call me the old school man, you know. She was like, you remind me of some old school Rakaz Rasta, man, you know. So, so it's like, it's in me from day one, you know. It's like our walk sometimes, like, you just look like this 50-year-old, you know. Don't look, my you know, my impression remind me of her dad generation, you know. So it's like, I mean, I would have said with this movement, it's like natural for me. And yeah, I'm not trying to copy or yeah, I respect the elders and like the foundation they set, but I think I'm like, have the elders spirit in me, you know, we don't like know it, you know. yeah, people been telling me, so yeah, and yeah, I guess that's a big influence on the EP, you know.
And that leads me on to what Hilltop is about. It's a fantastic piece of storytelling, and it is a story which has a definite beginning and a definite end as well. The whole EP feels like a tracking of a bit of a journey for you, and it comes across that you have now reached an end point in one part of your journey, and almost like you're starting a new era, because there's a line that stood out for me, and it's in my journey, and you say, I reached too far now to let go. I'm not going to slow down until I'm in full control. I mean, is that where you at? Is it a case of you feel now comfortable who you are and what you need to be doing, that you're now at a point where you can go, okay, let's now start on the second phase of a journey? Is that a fair kind of description?
Yeah, like I tell you earlier, I've been in it for more than a decade now, you know, so I'm reaching too far now, even though it seems rough still, and it's like, sometimes I'm like, you like, just taking a little break, man, because the industry is too much, man. But then I'm like, man, I've more than a decade in this thing now, I can't let go. It's like a waste, it's like a big waste, man, you know. Reach too far now to let go, man. It's too close to the finishing line, I think, you know, especially with this reggae revival thing, like as mentioned, like show where that light is at the end of the tunnel. So, man, reach too far to let go now, man. Even if it's one more decade to go, I mean, still reach far, because I learned a lot since in the industry, you know.
Yeah, and so your thoughts on that? I mean, I sort of ask quite a few artists this question because I'm always interested to hear their thoughts. I mean, across the world, politically and socially, we're in quite a kind of bad place. As you say, there is a sort of lot of positivity coming out of the revival movement. I mean, for you, do you think as a species we can kind of rescue ourselves from this? Do you have that hope that we can do that?
Rescue ourselves from the system?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely, we can rescue ourselves. It's a mind thing, definitely. Because, in our mind, all right, Trump is just one man, you know. An American, the citizens are millions. Just look on that now, man. Like, Trump, if we want Trump to get out of power, we just lift him up and Trump. You're out of power now, man, because they're not running the country, right? You know what I'm saying? It's a majority speak, but it's just the mindset of the people from day one. Tell themselves, like, oh, that's the government. We have a lot of power, you know, like. Yeah, you just say one word and then this era is like out, you know. But it's a majority, in my head, it's a majority speak. This minister is not right. Look, Mr. Minister, you have to straighten up your act and get everything right. So, or else, you're going, man. Because it's not right. I'm from Jamaica in Spanish Town where I'm from, man, I can tell you. It's terrible. We're talking about violence and without the living condition of people. It's way beyond terrible, man. So it's like I did have to do Spanish Town track, man. It's terrible. From the ghetto, you know, where it's like proper concrete, zinc fence and sewage and, you know, gunshot blazing. I lose friends like almost every mountain are, you know, by violence, and friend get arrested and spending some 10 years in prison, and some get framed too as well. A lot get used, and, you know, without knowing until the end of the day, you know. So, I've been in it.
Just touching on that, actually, you talk about the situation in Spanish Town, and that, I suppose that's kind of applies to Jamaica more broadly. It's interesting, really, because it's kind of like almost a contradiction, because so much music coming out of Jamaica is so conscious and it's so positive and it's so deep with what it's saying, that you think sort of people in Jamaica, as it were, would be above that and recognise that the system is at fault as to why their conditions are like they are. I mean, do you think that's because part of the reggae sort of music and the reggae vibe has been sort of taken by the system and by the industry, as you sort of were saying with dancehall somewhat? Or why do you think maybe people in Jamaica aren't as woke, I suppose is what I'm saying, as they should be, maybe?
Why they're not so focused? Or, this is a massive question.
Yeah, sorry, I know.
In Jamaica, it's like, what I see in Jamaica is that they have different sets of groups, you know, like, they have a positive vibe going on over here, have a negative vibe over there, you know? So, that's the thing. So, it kind of creates a balance, you know, like, if it was just violence alone in Jamaica, it would have been crumbled, you know? It would have crumbled. So, yeah, the positive group is there as well, you know? So while the negative group push, the positive group is pushing back and say, look, we are here too, you know, we're not going to let you crumble it. The negative group come again, oh, we're going to crumble this, man, you know? So that kind of vibe. So it's a balance, then, you know, between good and bad.
Yeah, and suppose that kind of then sums up the world really as well, doesn't it? Back to Hilltop, it's something you smash apart and discuss so well, is what you and what the movement is all about and where we're at and where you think we should be heading to. I mean, overall, what was there an overriding message in Hilltop that you wanted the listener to take away?
Yeah, it's a combination of, definitely, I want the people to do one. It's a combination of and my chatting as well, you know? It's a kind of experience and it's a kind of something that I would want to do and want others to do as well. You know? For example, with the song Hilltop, you know, I'm like, because like I tell you, I've been living in the ghetto for like, from as long as I know myself, you know? So it's like, it's terrible there with police system and the pollution of the air and all kind of thing. So it's like, and yeah, I'm from like my dad is from the countryside, you know, so I know what it's like to be in the hilltop, you know, so it just show you the difference living in the valley and living in the hilltop, you know, the kind of vibe you get from there. So definitely I'm saying, man, I have to go in the hilltop to live, man, one of these fine days, you know. But the thing is with the hilltop, you have to set a foundation there, so especially when you're doing music, you have to be in the valley. That's the thing about it, you have to be in the valley to spread the word, you know. So it's kind of a tricky there. So yeah, but my head is in the hill, you know. I'm in the valley, but my head is up in the hilltop, man. Yeah, definitely, man.
And it's great. You know what, you've just summed up in that sort of last few sentences why this EP is such a stroke of genius, because you are taking physical situations, as you say, you, if your dad grew up in the country, you've lived most of your life in the ghetto and you want to move to that hilltop, the countryside where it's free from pollution, but that's also a brilliant metaphor as well for spiritually what you're trying to achieve as well. And that's what makes Hilltop the EP such a masterful piece of work. It really is fantastic. I hope it gets you some recognition, but moreover I hope a lot of people listen to it, because that is ultimately the point, that people listen to what you're saying and get the message. Junior, it was a real, real, real treat to have you on the podcast. I really enjoyed that. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, man. And big shout out to Give Paz again, you know, for the link, man, you know.
Definitely. Gav Paws, who's my sound engineer as well, who does all my mastering and tinkering with the podcast. He is a lovely guy. Link in the show notes to him. But Junior, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man, and have a nice one, man. Peace out, man, and mighty respect to all the listeners. Definitely, brother, man.
Cheers. How amazing is Junior Morgan? What a lovely guy. So here is a track from his new EP, Hilltop, which is absolutely fantastic. This is called My Journey. Check this out, My Journey.
I've got so many hurdles to jump and a lot more rivers to cross. I'm aiming for that finish line. So I got to stay strong and focus, yes. I'm not giving on this journey, no. I am determined for my goals. I not stop searching till I find the right road, yes. I am mentally sturdy, so nothing cannot distract me on this journey. Oh no, my mission is my priority, so I'm playing my role, yes. Brick by brick, I have been locked the tower. I not stop work till it reach after hours. I'll do a lot of time, disappointment take me over. I still not go detour, cause I reach too far, no, yes, to let go. Even though it's a rocky road, I not go detour, cause I reach too far, no, yes, to let go. I not go slow down until I'm in full control. I'm willing to make the sacrifice to let the reaping possible. I have a lot of work to do, so I can't settle.
And that's it. Episode 15 of Topple Uncaged is done. I would like to thank my fabulous guests this week, the incredible Lizzie Fletcher. Follow her on Twitter. It's at L-I-Z-I-F-L-E. Also, the sensational Junior Morgan. follow him on Twitter. It's at J-R Morgan Music. As always, behind the scenes, thank you to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. Thank you to my man in the booth, Gav Paws. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Paws Radio. And as always, thank you to my in-house singer. It's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Ray_Star113. Now, I'm off to form my own independent political party so I can have a massive circle jerk with a load of other people. Ta-ta.
Uncaged.